Oh my God, but he's right here.
I'm sorry, Kate, could you hand me that and I'll start off? Okay, good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
As the person that will tell everybody to speak into mic, I'll start trying to do that myself. Okay, the topic of this 1 hour workshop is steps 1, 2, and 3 in the spiritual principles. My name's Beth, and I'm a compulsive eater, and I'm seated with Kate, and we are the co-leaders for this meeting.
Hi, Beth. Hi, Beth.
Thank you. Each of us will have up to 20 minutes to speak, and then we'll open the room for shares on the topic for up to 3 minutes each. The session is being recorded, which is one of the reasons why we want you to speak into the microphone. The other is for those of us like me who are hard of hearing. This workshop will end at 9:30. For the rest of the time, Okay, it's my 20 minutes to speak, and then Kate will take 20 minutes. And we have a timer up front that is Quinn. I'm going to set my own timer just so I can see. Okay, so I want to talk about the first three steps and their spiritual principles because I struggled with them when I came in, and I've got a different understanding of them now. My name's Beth. I'm a compulsive overeater, and I'm grateful to be here today and to be abstinent and in recovery. I came to this program in October 15th, 1988, which was 37 years ago last week. I've been to OA once in 1987, and it didn't take for me. When I came back a year later, I was desperate and thought I was ready to do whatever it took. So I said I was powerless over food, and it was clear that my life was unmanageable. I had a soft enough image of a high power that I thought I was working step two. I mean, who wouldn't want to be restored to sanity? And I said I was turning my will and my life over to this higher power, even though I wasn't sure what that meant or what it would look like. Actually, the first spiritual principle that I was gifted with was hope, the very beginning. About 6 weeks of my first meeting, my roommate mentioned a change in me, and I knew in my heart that the only thing different was that I had hope, and that was enough. I had faith in that I kept coming back. I knew very early on that I was a lifer. I heard in those early days that 7 out of 10 people leave OA, and my stubborn streak grabbed onto that, and I knew I'd be one of the three that stayed. I wanted to be. But honesty and the first step were harder for me. The fact that I kept coming back was the only thing that gave me a chance to understand the first step. Although I was never a dieter, my weight yo-yoed from college on. My freshman 15 was 30. From there on, I was on the plus plan, gain 30, lose 15, always going up even if slowly. The highest weight I ever saw on the scale was 211 pounds, but I went up a dress size or two after that. I estimate my top weight at about 225 pounds. When I came into OA, I was easily gifted with a 301 abstinent, 3 meals a day, life, but no food in between, 1 day at a time. I went down to 170 pounds and was happy with that. I started doing service the second week I was in OA, which was kind of funny, because, you know, I thought I was a know-it-all. I didn't think I was a know-it-all, but I was a know-it-all in my mind. And so I started doing service. My second month in OA, I became the intergroup rep for one of my meetings. And I also gained and lost my weight 2 more times in the next 5 years. In those days, we read the whole tools pamphlet, which I recommend. And my favorite words in all of the OA and AA literature were in the pamphlet under the tool of service. It said, what you can when you can, a life of sane and happy usefulness is what we are promised as a result of working these steps, and service helps to fulfill that promise. Unfortunately, I loved that piece and repeated the first two phrases over and over. Do what you can when you can. A life of sane and happy usefulness is what we are promised. Period. I knew that service helped to fulfill that promise, but somehow I missed the part about the promise being as the result of working these steps. I went directly to service, which I now understand is step 12. I skimmed over the first 11 steps. It's not that I didn't do them, but, you know, I mean, you'll hear in my story. The tools were really more my style. I loved meetings, and I wasn't afraid of the telephone. A lot of people talk about that back in the day when we used to have to pick it up and call people, dial it. I obviously loved service, and I was willing to learn about and to practice anonymity. I had a food plan, which was the loosely defined 301 plan. I was our intergroup's literature person, so not only did I own all the books, I read them all, and I read the Daily Readers Daily. That seemed like enough. But the tools I didn't use were writing and sponsorship. It's not to say I worked steps. I did think I was doing steps 1, 2, and 3 daily. I wrote a fourth step on my own, and I gave it away to someone with years of abstinence who'd been at my first meeting. But she asked some questions about what might be missing in it, and I felt like I failed. And that was one of the times I went into relapse. That was one of my 2 relapses. I don't want it to sound like I blame her, because that's what I do. I blame people, right? She said this. What she said is, you've talked for 3 hours and you've never mentioned any romantic relationships. And I'm like, they weren't the answer to any of the questions. What can I say? But she had me read this part in the big book that says, you know, before you go on to step 6, you make sure you've covered everything. I just felt like I failed. And, you know, so I had a solution to everything, which was food. At the height of my second, okay, it might have worked better if I'd worked it with the help of a sponsor, but I don't think I really understood steps 1, 2, and 3 yet. At the height of my second relapse, 5 years into the program, I was talking to that same woman daily at her instigation when one day I was humbled enough to say, would you be my sponsor and work the steps with me? That was a big deal for me. Her response stunned me. Remember, I thought I'd been working steps 1, 2, and 3 daily for 5 years. And she had the nerve to ask me, I don't think you're ready to work step 1. I said, what do you mean? I work step 1 every day. She said, it sounds to me like you eat what you want when you want. I assured her I did not. And I'm not nice about these assurances. I did not. If I ate what I wanted when I wanted, I'd be eating mass amounts all day, every day. But then I thought about it. I did eat what I wanted 3 times a day. I didn't eat too much of that, but it was totally self-will about what I wanted, and it wasn't breaking my 301 abstinence. After a couple weeks, I'm still talking to her, I said to her, humbled but still belligerent as I am, well, what would you have me eat? Her response shocked me. She's like the quietest person you'll ever meet, and she's like, well, how about meat and potatoes and salad and vegetable? Does that sound normal to you all? Well, it had never occurred to me. My family didn't eat that way. You know, my mom was Italian. And we just didn't eat meals cut out that way. We frequently had salad. But, it just was shocking to me. But I was willing to try. I agreed at that point not to eat sugar. I was too embarrassed after 5 years to say, no, I have that sugar. So I said that. And the only other thing I agreed to was not to have sugar, not to have chippy type things, and not to eat pie. I probably haven't had 5 pieces of pie in my life. So I was, you know, like really brave and wonderful to say that. And to weigh and measure my fats. That was the only thing I agreed to. Those were the things I agreed to. What happened was I had to learn how to cook those things. You know, I knew how to boil water and make pasta, but I didn't know how to tell if a hamburger was cooked. I just stuck my finger in the middle. I lived by myself, so I could do that. And she had to teach me everything about how to cook, you know, plain, simple proteins and vegetables. And then she had to teach me how big my potato should be if I wanted 1 teaspoon of butter to cover it. I was like, oh, this isn't very much butter. She's like, oh my God, how big is your potato? What do you mean? So I did end up weighing weighing my potato so that my butter would work. I considered the realization that I ate only the things I wanted and was used to be my first inkling of true honesty about my powerlessness over food, my true first step. I believe my, well, how would you have me eat, as arrogant and belligerent as it was, to be my first true third step, my first sign of willingness to really change, to change in ways that weren't my will or at my convenience. As I said, I came in, I changed, and I lost, you know, 40 pounds very quickly. But then I also gained it back because it was all about my will those first 5 years. Around the time I got a sponsor, which was in my fear in OA, I also started writing daily. I remember hearing people say back then, I use every tool every day. And I thought, who are you trying to kid? That's just not possible. I just couldn't even wrap my mind around it. You know, and especially if they worked. I worked, but I actually, you know, could. I did try, you know, there were a couple periods where I was desperate enough to do 90 meetings in 90 days. I could go to a meeting every day, or sometimes I would go to 2 meetings in 1 day and then have to miss a day. But yeah, I actually could work every tool every day. Now, since COVID with online meetings, it's easier. And still, I use almost every tool every day. I make it a point to use every tool, except I only go to 5 meetings a week, unless I'm doing service at another meeting. I don't know, you know, maybe still obstinate, whatever, but I do understand it. And believe me, when, I'm struggling, I'm there. I will definitely go to at least 1 meeting a day. I needed the hope of the second step and the faith of the third step to keep me coming back until I very slowly started to see the honesty in the first step. I still, I don't know if I struggle, but I still question myself all the time. After 37 years, I've done service probably every minute I've been in OA. I have had been a member of my inner group for 28 out of the first 34 years I was in. And part of that is not so much ego, but kind of desperation and not so much trusting in my higher power. When my mom was dying, which was 25 years ago next week, I said to my sponsor, oh my gosh, you know, I got to take care of my mom and I don't think I can get up to intergroup. And she's like, intergroup will be fine without you. They've been around for, you know, 30 years before you, and they'll be around after you. And I had to take my ego out of that. So I just keep coming back. You know, there's that sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. I'm definitely on the slowly route, and that's okay with me. That gives me, having that in the big book, having that in the promises, gives me kind of permission to be who I am. I'm not cheating. I am trying the best that I can every day. I don't know. So I'll go on to a piece of literature that I liked was on the, this is a quote, each morning brings a new surrender, a new admission of my powerlessness, and a new commitment to abstinence through steps 1, 2, and 3. It is a quiet time, a new beginning, a new day. That's from Lifeline Sampler, page 69, although I came across it on the January 12th, Voices of Recovery. And so, you know, to me that asks me, am I still teachable? Am I still, you know, willing to admit my powerlessness every day? Do I believe in this power greater than myself and have hope that I will be restored to sanity, or am being restored to sanity is how I like to say it? And am I willing to turn my will and my life over to a power greater than myself? So this morning in the Voices of Recovery workbook, which has the questions on the reading of the day. The question was, do I listen for commonalities and not differences when others in OA share? And when has someone sharing helped me recognize my own behaviors that may need to be changed? So yesterday, I drove about 5.5 hours here with a friend who's been in program longer than me, and she's younger than me, which is nice. And we were actually talking to another friend on a speakerphone, and she told us what she started doing in the morning, that after, she's close to 50 years in program. She came in when she was 16. And after being unhappy with some things, she heard a speaker who did a specific something in the morning, and so she started doing it, and she said things have changed. And I'm listening to her, and I'm like, you know, I need to change. My life is beyond my wildest dreams, and I can still be restless, irritable, and content. I can still blame others and things like that. So we asked her to send us her new morning ritual. And this morning I got on my knees and tried it. Hers is very personalized, and I have not yet personalized it for myself. But I know I need to do it differently, including and especially steps 1, 2, and 3. I need to keep them fresh. I need to remember that this is what I need. And so I got on my knees, which I don't do very often. Her husband's asleep in the morning. I'm not sure what I'm going to do, but I will do something because I need to. I need to change. I need to keep changing, and that's important to me. And these are the basis for it, right? Can I handle this problem in my day today? You know, serenity prayer. Is this something I can change, or do I have to accept it? Can I get help from a power greater than myself, or is this all dependent on me and my will? And what does turning it over look like? That's always tricky for me. But actually, practice makes progress, you know, for me, and I'm willing to give it a try. And I think that's all I have to say today about steps 1, 2, and 3. And I appreciate everybody listening. I'm going to turn it over to Kate to share next.
Good morning, everyone. I am going to keep my sugar-free throat lozenge and my water right here because I'm having some sort of allergy thing going on, and when I speak for long periods of time, I can start coughing. So apologies for that. Hi, everyone. I'm Kate. I'm a compulsive overeater and restrictor. And it's really good to see all of you this morning. I want to ask, first of all, are there any newcomers in the room? No one? No one? I know you're a newcomer back there. No. You're a newcomer, right?
Oh, yeah. I just asked her what restrictor.
Oh, okay. I can talk to you about it afterwards. Restrictors tend to have their own definitions of that. So, anyway, I want to tell you, what's your name?
I'm having a really hard time, Dad. I didn't want to come before.
I'm glad you're here. This is the place to be. And I was taught by my sponsor that you're the most important person in the room. So, really grateful that you're here and you made it. I also want to ask really quickly, how many people within the first 5 minutes of waking this morning had gratitude on their minds? Oh, good. You're doing a lot better than I am. So my disease manifests in a really self-involved way. And the first thing I want to think about is me. And the first thing I need to be thinking about is what higher power's plan is for me today. And for all of those things, I'm grateful. I'm grateful that I'm here at this convention. I'm grateful for the clothes on my back and the roof over my head. I am grateful that I'm surrounded by fellows that have been in the same trenches I have. Even if your story looks very different than mine, I know we've been somewhere similar together. So thank you to all of you. Okay, so experience, strength, and hope. So I'll tell you a little bit about my story. I came into rooms in around 2005, but not for myself. I was accompanying my best friend who was celebrating her 3-month anniversary. And we arrived to the meeting a little bit late. And when we walked in, the speaker who was already speaking said, "You know, when I first came into the rooms, someone wished me a long and slow recovery. And I wanted to punch their lights out because I didn't understand what that meant." And so here I am. I've never been to an OA meeting before. I'm listening to this person thinking, well, I don't know what that means either. I have been in program now for December 1st will be 15 years. And when I left the room that day with my friend, I was crying because I think I knew I belonged here, but I wasn't willing to admit it. So if you can do the math, that means I didn't come back in for another 5 years, 2010. When I arrived on December 1st into my first meeting, it was a Wednesday night in Brooklyn, New York. It was because the weeks prior to that, and I can now, of course, trace this all the way back to when I was 5 years old. But the weeks prior to that, I was abominable to be around. And I want to read you a paragraph from Alcoholics Anonymous Big Book. "The alcoholic, compulsive overeater, is like a tornado roaring his way through the lives of others. Hearts are broken, sweet relationships are dead, affection have been uprooted. Selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept the home in turmoil. We feel a man is unthinking when he says that sobriety is enough. He is like the farmer who came out of the cyclone cellar to find his home ruined. To his wife, he remarked, 'Don't see anything the matter here, Ma. Ain't it grand the wind stopped blowing?'" That was me. I wasn't even aware of my anger, my resentment, my cycloning through the day, and how it affected everyone around me. But I remember on December 1st, I was getting ready for work, and my spouse was in bed reading paper, and I was in my closet cursing and throwing things out of the closet, and nothing looked good on me, and why doesn't this fit anymore? And I think I wanted her to say to me, "Wow, you look great, don't worry about it, all of that looks good on you." But instead, I was so enraged that she just shrunk into the bed, and the sheets got higher and higher until I could only see her eyes. And she said very quietly to me, and thank God she'd been working the 12-step program, "Do you think you might want to go to Overeaters Anonymous?" And I said, "I'm going tonight." And I walked into those rooms, and I was crying by the end of the meeting because I knew I belonged there. And I never left. So, step one, the principle is honesty. I got real honest really fast. That I belonged in those rooms, that I was a compulsive overeater. The Richter part came later. That part of my disease is far more loose to me than the overeating. I remember attending a meeting where they talked about surrender and powerlessness. And I thought to myself, oh, no, I'm neither of those things. I was raised a feminist. Those words mean defeat. They mean weakness. They mean helplessness. And I'm none of those things. And what I discovered is that the surrender was relief. Admitting the powerlessness was relief. When I could finally do that, it was like, oh yeah, I'm turning this over to a higher power. The problem was is that I thought I had higher power that worked, and my higher power did not work. At that point in program, I had a spiritual practice that was about 10 years old, and it was beautiful, and it was lovely, and I had solid community. And I thought that I had a higher power, I prayed to this higher power, all of that. But when it came to the food, this higher power had nothing on my eating, on my lack of control, on the obsession of the mind, on the allergy of the body. So I had to dig deep, and I ended up speaking with my sponsor about this, and she said, I want you to write out who you think your higher power is. So that's what I did. I wrote out who I thought my higher power was, 3 or 4 pages in my journal. I read it aloud to her. She said, how did that higher power feel to you? And I said, the higher power feels really far away from me. I'm not really sure. I've got an ideal of this higher power, but I don't know how this higher power works in my life. And this was step two. How I came to believe that if we're greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity, this was not part of my daily practice. I didn't know who this entity was. So then she said to me, my sponsor, I want you to write who you want your higher power to be. Now this is a game changer, because I was not raised with any particular religion, spiritual practice. I was adopted. My parents were not raised very religiously. They thought to themselves, Kate can choose her own higher power when she's old enough. I've got feelings about that now, but what that allowed me to do in the moment was to sit down and ask myself, who do I want my higher power to be? Now, this is a foreign concept for many of us. If we were raised with a particular religion or spiritual practice, we didn't have any spiritual practice at all, if we're an atheist, if we're an agnostic. But for me, it was really important that I identify the qualities of this higher power. So I wrote them down. And it seems like such a simple exercise, and it might even be talked about in the 12 and 12. But when I read that version of who I wanted my higher power to be against who I thought my higher power was, they were vastly different. And from then on, I was able to connect. If I needed my higher power and I was sitting somewhere where I was nervous or anxious or wanting to reach for the food, I close my eyes, I take a breath, I lean back, and I can feel my higher power's arms around me. She's got this. She's got this. Because I do not. So it's a practice. This is a spiritual practice, right? I thank you very much. So I still struggle in my personal relationships, because where I was applying my higher power was with the food and my food plan and people in program. But when it came to the real world, I still had a really hard time. I still struggled with bringing all of this work that we do in these rooms into the real world, into my work life, into my social life, into communities that I associate with. So that was a whole other layer. And I heard a beautiful poem yesterday that said, when you're in an argument with someone, it's a race to see who the victim is. And I thought, wow, that is me. I can race there faster than anyone. And as we know from what we've heard in the rooms all the time we've been here, is victims never recover. And I have to remind myself of that every single day. So this is what it looks like now. Again, almost in program 15 years, I'm always doing service. Service is paramount for my recovery. If I'm not doing service, I'm back to the navel gazing. So I'm doing service at the group level. I'm doing service above the group level. I tend to hold positions at least two meetings that I attend, both on Zoom and in person. I've been absent since September 23rd, 2024. That abstinence involves not just what I'm eating, but how I'm eating it. And if you want to know more about that, I can talk to you about that afterwards. I have one sponsee right now. I've had many over many months, and as my sponsor says, they're like pigeons. They just fly away. So to not beat myself up about that, but I'm sponsoring the way that I know how to sponsor. My faith involves connecting with my higher power every day. That usually means gratitude to the moment I wake up. It was difficult to do when I'm thinking about what I'm going to say here today, nervous public speaking. I exercise, I get to work, I open up my forte and my voices of recovery. And I read them, if not write on them. That's really important too. Two-way prayer has been huge for me. If you don't know what two-way prayer is, it's going on next door right now. It'll be going on tomorrow morning at 8:30. I highly recommend you check it out. It's a beautiful practice. It's really been a game changer for me. I write a letter to my higher power, and then she writes back to me. Tells me what I need to know for the day or on a particular problem I'm having. The first time I started doing two-way prayer, at the end of that week, my sponsor said, we only meet on Zoom. I've never met my sponsor in person. And we've been together about 6 or 7 years. She said to me, "What's going on? You're glowing." And I said, "Well, I started two-way prayer." She said, "That's it. That's what's going on for you." So check that out. I want to say, sorry, I'm jumping all over the place. I just signed up for this yesterday. So I took a little bit, a few notes. But I want to say to anyone in the room who has struggled with a higher power, maybe you don't, maybe you're an atheist and you don't struggle with that, and God is good orderly direction, or the great outdoors, or gang of dykes, as my friend likes to say. But what I will say is that step three took a really, really long time for me. It's one to then identify your higher power, but it's another to then be agreeable to turn your will and your life over to that higher power. That takes some real practice. That takes some real as-ifing. And there are too many instances now where either God has skin on, or things have happened in my life where I think, okay, that was not an accident. And thank you so much. So I want to end with, I think, two stories of this example, because if you start to look around for higher power acting in your life, you really start to notice it. The first was actually getting on an airplane. And I arrived at the airport with my carry-on and my personal item and a bag of food for the plane. That food was not in a plastic grocery bag, which probably would have been allowed on if I just showed them what it was. It was a reusable lunch bag. And they stopped me and said, "You can't go on with three bags." I was unable to combine them. Well, I put up a huge stink. And I'm embarrassed to say it now, but of course this was before recovery. And I said, "This is my food. I have to have it. I have to get on the plane with it." They let everyone else on the plane. They called over the supervisor. The supervisor stood there and listened to me as I bitched and moaned about my, you know, needing to take this third bag on. And she just nodded at me. And she said, "I understand. I have to eat at a certain time of the day too." And she let me on the plane, and I thought that woman was in OA. I've never seen her before or since, and even if she wasn't, that's what I like to believe. She was one of us. The next story is somewhere where I am still looking to be in my life, and that is walking with the presence of HP everywhere I go and in everything I do. And that means freedom from the obsession of food in my mind so that I can actually be of service to others. It was a few years ago. I was out in California visiting my parents. My father was struggling with depression at the time. I dropped him off at a meeting where he needed to be, and I had about an hour and a half to kill. And I looked up an OA meeting, and I called the contact, and they said, we actually meet in a park now, and we usually walk around the park. It's a very large park. So I went there, and there's only one other fellow that attended. It was a gentleman, and we went for a walk for about an hour. And in that time, I was telling him about my own program, and I'm on the East Coast, and I do service, and I was talking to him generally about program. And I said, what about you? And he said, well, it's been a little bit of a tough time. Well, why is that? Well, you know, those wildfires that just happened, my house burned down. I said, that's huge. He said, yeah, well, we were lucky enough that we have friends that we're staying with right now. We're still getting the insurance figured out. It's kind of a mess. But we've decided to rebuild. I mean, if I were in that person's shoes, I would be so dramatic I could have won an Oscar. And this gentleman was like, God, there's nothing I can do about that. Everything in his world burned to ash. And there was nothing, he was like, that's accepting life on life's terms. So it's people like that, and it's people like you that keep me sane and safe and working these steps, and steps 1, 2, and 3 over and over again, right? The OA waltz, step 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. So I think that's all I have to say. Thank you so much for letting me share, and thank you for being here. Oh, sure. Okay. If you would like to share, please form a line at the front of the room. We remind you that this session is being recorded and your sharing demonstrates your consent to be recorded. If you wish to remain anonymous, please use a fictitious name or choose not to share. Please say where you are from and how long you've been in OA, but devote your share to your OA experience, strength, and hope on the topic of this workshop, which is steps 1, 2, and 3. And the meeting is now open for sharing.
No. Okay. Hello, everyone. My name is Debbie, and I am a... Hi. Can you hear me now? My name is Debbie, and I am a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Debbie.
Thank you both for your shares. I don't usually go, when I come to things like this, I don't usually go to the STEP meetings. I usually go to one of the other themed things, but I decided that this time I was coming to the STEP meeting because I recently, my sponsor had to let me go because of something that happened in her life. And what came up for me was the huge fear of starting over with someone new. And when I really, really thought about it, it was the fear of possibility of someone telling me to do something different with my food. I'm very attached to the food that I eat right now. It's healthy. It's fulfilling. It's, you know, I've been maintaining a healthy body weight for 10, 11 years now, eating this type of food. But today I heard the word surrender, and I know steps 1, 2, and 3, and all about surrender. But I really heard it today. Several times fellow members have suggested that I contact a nutritionist or a dietitian to make sure that I'm eating everything that I should be eating. And today I'm making a commitment to do that. I'm going to surrender to a nutritionist and let them tell me whether this is okay for me. I also want to say that I'm looking for a sponsor. I did put a note up out on the message board, and hoping to find a sponsor that way. So I've already been contacted by a person where I left my number. So yeah, I'm just really grateful to be here and really grateful to be, thank you, immersing myself in the steps again. So thanks.
Anybody else? Length time on the tape is not effective.
Hi, I'm Michelle. Welcome, Hope of Eater. Hi, everyone. I wanted to thank you both. I find myself very emotional listening to both of you, which is a beautiful thing, because I feel like part of my disease is like blocking my emotions. So steps 1, 2, and 3 and how you each talked about them really just brought out so much. And it's funny because when it comes to emotions, like I am powerless over my emotions. I'm powerless over my restrictiveness on my emotions. I'm very grateful when I can feel things. I guess that's all I'm saying. Thanks.
Hey everyone, my stay compulsive over you. Thank you for sharing your hope. I love the 1, 2, 3, the OA walls. Because I love the concept of dance as the joy of this program and how God leads, God leads me into the dance of life. And so that was lovely. Can I ask you a question? I'm sorry, I didn't know your name.
I'm Beth.
Beth. Beth, you said that your sponsor or someone that you knew gave you this revolutionary thing to do first thing in the morning. Oh, sorry. That Beth mentioned it when she was speaking, that someone had suggested this revolutionary thing to do in the morning. I wonder if you could speak a little bit about what it did for you? Because you mentioned all you said then was that I got on my knees.
Okay, so she mentioned something yesterday. I tried it today. It's not been revolutionary for me at this point, except for my willingness to try it. And I will say what it was for her, which was revolutionary for her. And what I was talking about is my willingness to try something different. This is what she says. First thing she does in the morning is go to the bathroom. Second, she gets on her knees at her bedside because her husband's always sleeping. And she's also done in other locations in her house. This is what she says for her own personal situation and recovery. Thank you, Mama God, for the blessings of this day. I am powerless over food, the effect of alcoholism, what other people think, say, and do, money, work, perfectionism, and driven nature, and compulsive worry. These are the things that brought me to the 12-step programs I'm working, and my life is unmanageable. I believe you know all this about me and love me, just saying. I believe you are the power greater than myself that is restoring me to sanity, balance, wholeness, and harmony. I am making a decision to turn my will and my life and my food, the effects of alcoholism, what other people think, say, and do, money, work, perfectionism, my driven nature, and compulsive worry over to the care of Mama God as I misunderstand her. Here is my will. And then she says what her will for the day is. And I also did that. If this is also your will for me, please open my mind and heart and increase my interest, desire, and willingness to take the actions that will lead me toward these outcomes. If this is not your will for me, please show me what your will is. I want to do your will. Please open my mind and heart and increase my interest, desire, and willingness to take the actions that lead me toward your will. I am afraid of blank. She lists hers, I listed mine. Please help me to love and accept myself exactly as I am today. So that has made a change in her life after 50 years in program, and I'm willing to try it.
Thank you.
everybody. I'm a compulsive overeater. I too have a wall up against my emotions, so I'm grateful when I'm really tired because I have no, the barriers are down, so I can think better. So I'm really feeling this morning because I really didn't sleep last night. So I'm grateful for that because I can really hear everybody and what they're saying, and I can internalize it. And I was thinking about the honesty part of step one and how I can lie to myself. Only one more game, only one more cookie, only one more anything, fill in the blank, any sort of diversion. And that's why, for me, it's important to check in with a sponsor or another trusted fellow and get me back on the, get me back into balance. Thank you so much. You said some really profound things about higher power. Maybe we can talk later. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. All right, I really don't need the mic because I got a big mouth. I'm Mike, I'm calls over here. I had trouble with surrender, and a couple sponsors told me that, look, all you're surrendering is your will. And he sat there and goes, well, what has your will done for you? What is the best thing you did with your willpower? I had to admit, the best thing I could ever come up with was my disease. All my willpower gets me to the feet. All my willpower runs me from where I am right now. Either sticks me in the past, where I'm beating myself up over it, or I'm worried about what's going to happen that probably will happen. I'm not here, not present. And when I surrender, I'm present. I'm just asked to be here, right now, nowhere else. And that's where my higher power is. And when I am present, things happen. They just do. And they're strange. And they don't mean much to anybody else, but they mean something to me. I'll be walking in the woods, and I'm going crazy. I can't handle this stuff anymore. It's going nuts. I'm starting another 12-step program. I was in another program for 35 years. Doesn't that count for something? God damn it, God damn it. I come upon a stump, and there's a small tree growing up in the stump. And my higher power is saying, from the old, come to new. I will make you grow again. So it's just not your willpower. It's a means to see where you are now, because the food kept me from it. I get to be around people like you that share your love and strength with me, and I get hope. I wouldn't be that. I'd be hiding. So with that, I pass. Thank you.
Hi, everybody. I've never ever come to the step meetings because I did the steps. But last year I went to one of them because there was nothing else that was interesting me, and I had like a crazy psychic change. So this year I decided to go to every single step meeting and leading one of the step meetings. So last night I sat here and I was like, you know, in the whole ballroom, and I love these lights. And I was like, I don't know why I'm here. Like, I'm so tired, and it was a long drive, and it seemed boring to me. I don't know what's wrong with me. By day, when I hear some speakers, I'm like, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this. And I think for me, and there's just one other thing, I can see people once a year at these conferences, and they're like seeing my best friends. I don't have to see you for a whole year, and I could see you and I could say, so what happened this year, tell me, and I mean it. Or somebody says to me, what's going on? So just about step one, two, and three, I had very, very very, very difficult month. Something was looming in my life that was terrifying and was going to cost me a lot of money if it didn't somehow fix itself. And I was crawling out of my skin. I was just, I can't even begin to tell you. I mean, you all know that. And I really believe in this phrase, nothing changes if nothing changes. So I could keep going exactly like I'm going, or I could change something and see if it helps. So I started to pray, and I just had some acceptance and realized the problem was only money. Not like I have money, but it wasn't death, it wasn't sickness, it wasn't tragedy, it was just money. I could live in my sister's basement the rest of my life. And I had a change about it. It was just like, okay, it's going to be what it's going to be. And then it fixed itself somehow. And I told my sister what happened, and she said, I don't believe in anything. I know her. I don't believe in God. I don't believe in people. I don't believe she's, you know, nasty bitch. And she said to me, I could tell you something. I have been praying for you. I have been praying so hard to an entity I do not believe in that this problem gets solved for you. And I think that the change of what she did and the change of what I did and our higher powers, which I know she has, even if she doesn't know she has, changed this problem and solved it. So just thank you.
Good morning. My name is Quinn. I'm a compulsive overeater. And I am actually from the Fort Lauderdale, Florida, Miami area. And yes, I and the reason why that's important is someone said this earlier about wherever you go, you have a family of choice. And that's really important to me. And I want to thank the speakers so much, because when I travel to all over the country, as I do, and I get to go to other meetings, they say things that I don't hear locally. You know, when I go to my same meetings, it's like, blah, blah, same slogan, same slogan. But you come to these conventions to learn something new. And I heard the concept, you know, I heard the constant growth. Now, my program is very simple. It has to stay simple. And being an addict, I have a tendency to be very black and white. Things are either this or they are that. I have a real hard time living in the ellipses, so to speak. And I heard that somebody was talking about that before, that when you don't know, it makes me feel like I have ants underneath my skin. I could really relate to that. So for me, step one is, am I able to control this situation? And usually the answer is no. And then the next piece is, is my trying to control it making my life unmanageable? And the answer almost always is, yeah, you're trying to control this. So my higher power, doesn't really have human characteristics. It's, sometimes I wish it would. Like, outside, it doesn't judge, right? Because humans can judge, it's what we do. But it also doesn't punish me. And it is that inner voice. I hear people, I like the term spiritual practice. I'm going to walk away with that today. I'm going to give myself, I have 1 minute left. And so step two for me was, and some talked about relief. When I came in a program and they said I didn't have to do this by myself anymore, what a huge relief. Because I grew up in a family where it was all about pull up your bootstraps, you know, you're six, you should be cooking your own breakfast, you know, you're eight, you should be doing your own laundry. Like, just that was the way it was. It was kind of every man for himself in my family. And so I came here and I was very suspicious. I was like, what do you guys really want from me? Because I didn't believe that people wanted to help me. Like, what's in it for you? And what I realized is that a life of usefulness, how happy that can, that how easy that can be. And then step three was kind of like, well, if I don't have to worry about this anymore, sure, I want to give it to whatever entity works for me. And so I just wanted to share my gratitude that I can go anywhere in the world and be with my family of choice. Thank you.
We have 2 more minutes.
Go Good morning. My name is Sarah. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Sarah.
North Carolina. Hi. Just have been thinking about when I first got into this. I went to a yoga class. It was yoga for 12-step recovery, and the teacher had us go into this pose at the end where, like, my arms were out, pointed, and she had us inhale, and then she said, as you exhale, think of one thing that you want to surrender. I wasn't planning on surrendering anything that night, but I knew in my depth that I had to surrender sugar. There was this voice just right there saying, time. And it wasn't, you know, till the end of the year or for the next 2 weeks. It was, this is it for you. You need to let it go. And I had a choice, you know, do I follow or do I not? And I'm so grateful to say I said yes to that. I was shaking. I was horrified. What am I doing? But I said yes. And that has carried me through. And that yes brought me to the next thing, the next step in my life, where I found myself in an OA meeting. And I said yes to a sponsor. And I said yes to a new food plan. And it was one day after the next, where I continually said yes to my higher power's promptings. And now it's been about 5.5 years. I haven't had a day where I wasn't following that. And there's a lot of ways where I need to keep going back to that. It's good to be at step one again. And know, like, even today, there's going to be little lights for me to follow, because it's a lot of darkness. But then there's one light that pops up. And I walk toward that one, and then the next one comes available, and the next one, and I just trust that the next one's going to be there. So far, my higher power hasn't let me down, and with that, I pass.
Okay, that is all the time we have for sharing. Thanks for attending the workshop, and we will close with the Lee version of the Serenity Prayer. God, grant the serenity to accept the things we can't change, the courage to change the things we can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thy will, not mine, be done. Thank you, everyone.
Great job.
Great job to you.
Yeah.
It's so fun. I just feel like it's so fun. And I want to do a I think I have the power of it. I don't know if that's you. Instructions.
By sliding right side of button down.